This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 15 for March 3rd, 2011. Welcome back to another Thursday night in Home Tech Land. I am here with the guys that seem to stick around the Home Tech Podcast week in and week out. And guys, it's good to have you back. We'll start with Brian Burgess. He is a blogger over at simplehelp.net and an all-around good writer. So, Brian, how are you?
Hey, not doing too bad, Jim.
Yeah. Hey, you got anything else in the works you can talk about?
Actually, well, Dave from the Home Server Show, we're bringing back adding apple.com. And
all right, and that was a site Dave kicked off when he bought his iPad, and now that you have one, you're going to try and resurrect it? Is that what's going on?
Well, yeah, I have that and then my Mac Mini, so.
Okay.
And I have been talking, and we're going to start working on that. So
that's still not up, though, right? If I type in addingapple.com, I don't get anywhere, right, at this point?
Yeah, no, it's there.
It up? Okay. All right. So yeah. if you're a Mac enthusiast and you want to get in on the ground level on a new Mac site, addingapple.com, and Brian, you can keep us abreast of that. Also have Christian Johnson with us. Christian runs biosmods.com, and is just a super smart kid. A little bit of a love fest, Christian, last week on the Extra podcast, right? You kind of got some love. Did that feel weird kind of listening to that podcast?
Yeah, a little bit. I'll take it.
Yeah, you deserve it. It was good work. Good having your dad on, so make sure that you thank him. If you haven't listened yet, 14, which we didn't really put a number to, is Christian's dad coming on after the podcast last week on 13 and giving his opinion on tablets and technology, and we enjoy talking to him. So we'll have him back on the show again. So it was good. Thanks for sharing him with us.
Hey, no problem. Christian.
And once again, Andrew Morris. Andrew coming to us from Melbourne and in making time in another continent to be on the podcast. Andrew, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, welcome, Jim. Good to be back.
Yeah, and you were complaining about it being cold over there, but I'm not buying it.
55 degrees by your scale, so yeah. Given last week it was nearly 100, it's a fair difference.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back. So I apologize for the delay. If you're listening live, which we don't have too many at this point, I probably drove them all away. But we were a little late getting out tonight. I was out the company that I work for, Gallup, had an awards program. And we were all out at a local restaurant. And, you know, I could have, guys. It didn't dawn on me until I get home. And I felt kind of stupid because I do this technology stuff all the time. And we've been joking about, you know, way back we talked about those commercials, you know, to the cloud. And so as I was driving home, I thought, I am so dumb. I could have – there, they had Wi-Fi. I was connected to it with my phone. And I was Skyping with you guys telling you guys, hey, tell everybody I'm going to be late, blah, 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 blah. I could have went out and grabbed my laptop. I could have fired that up, came in through Windows Live Mesh, remoted into my computer, started Ustream, got some music going, at least so folks who land on the site would have heard some, you know, music going in the Ustream. I probably even could have podcasted if I'd had my headset. I probably could have just pulled up a seat and conducted the whole podcast right from the restaurant. Might have been a little loud. But so, guys, I felt a little stupid. You know, I should have thought of that away. So next week – laptop goes with me because I have three of these in a row, tonight, next Thursday, Thursday after that. They all run until about 7:30 here Central. I'll fire up the Ustream early so at least some folks have some music, and we will go to the cloud. So, to the cloud. Yay, cloud.
Speaking of live mesh, people who are in the beta program need to get their data out, right? And add it to the 2011 version? Is that?
I don't know. I haven't been following.
What's going on?
So you're talking about the old mesh beta?
Yeah. The live mesh beta.
Right. So the one that we all kind of originally started on, that went then Windows Live
2011 or whatever.
Sync, and now it's in Windows 2000 Live Essential. It's called Windows Live Mesh, right? Is that what you're referring to, Brian?
Yep.
Yeah, well, you should be making that transition anyways if you're still using.
Yeah, it's ending. I pulled it up here. It's ending in March, so this month.
Okay.
So if you're using the beta, get your data out of there, and you should be good to go.
You know,
using,
pretty
2011.
Pretty handy tool there in 2011. In fact, when I came home, I used Mesh to remote to the Ustream server in the house here. It's actually our media PC that records all the TV content for our living room. And it so I used Mesh to remote into it. And when I went there, my wife had logged me out and logged her in. We also use it to remote to our the PCs at our church to do maintenance and run updates so I don't have to go out there and do it. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised. She knows how to do it. So if she could do it, I mean, it's a fairly easy way to remote either across town or, you know, across the city or even across the world. As I was driving home, another thought I had tonight was, you know, I should create this public Ustream server for us and create some generic credentials that I give to you guys. And so if I'm ever in a bind, I can say, hey, one of you guys come in through Mesh, use these username and passwords and get things going in my absence. So I'll have to think about setting something like that up and then taking it off my network, right? I would want that to be available to the internet, but I wouldn't want necessarily you guys to have access. I mean, I trust you guys, but not that much.
You do.
I can feel the Rogue podcast coming on.
I trust Christian, but the other
us.
Success.
The other two, I'm not too sure about. So
yeah.
Anyway, so there's some for the tech guy. If you're not using Mesh and if you're not using that and you're traveling across town to remote into PCs, it's easy. It's free. Part of Windows Live Essential. 2011. So raced home tonight, got the podcast going. Again, sorry we're late. If you do want to reach the show with comments and scream at me because I was late tonight, you can send an email to the podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Lots of new podcast stuff going on every week, so you might want to check out the site. If you don't have the podcast set up on the RSS feed or automatically coming in through iTunes, and you know what? Zune has forgotten. I'm never going to get Zune integration. It's just not going to work. So,
are you just giving up on that, then?
I think I am. Take the RSS feed out off the page and just plug it into the RSS reader or the RSS submit button in Zune, and voila, you'll have the podcast there. So, a bunch of new fitness tech podcasts. Of course, we are here every week. We had a special last week, so you want to watch the feed, and we'll do that from time to time. And have some feeds out there. So, all right, let's get down to business. Brian, you got a bunch of stuff here. Of course, this week, the iPad 2 came out. Good to see Steve Jobs in the flesh. I think that.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, that was maybe a little more impressive even than the iPad 2. Of course, you bought the first generation iPad.
Right.
Brian, are you disappointed you didn't wait?
No, okay. I'm really not. From what I saw and I watched the original announcement, it doesn't have a whole lot that I'm worried about having. The phones, yeah, it's going to be faster, but I don't use applications on it that are that process intensive. So, you know, it's a little lighter. There's no improvement in the screen resolution or anything like that. So I'm going to be happy with the first one and wait for the iPad 3 probably.
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard that, that this is kind of like a 1.5 as opposed to being a 2.
Yeah, and then also iOS 4.3 will be coming out the same day. So that's going to give better functionality to the one that I have now. So,
okay.
I think I'm okay.
Christian, what do you think of this iPad 2?
Well, I think it's pretty cool because it's bringing some new hardware to the table in terms of the CPU is going to be twice as fast, and it's going to have HDMI out. So. They're claiming 1080p, so I mean that's a pretty impressive bar for that kind of real estate there in terms of the width of the device and the price it's going for. So that's pretty interesting to me. And also it's 33% thinner. So going back to that whole real estate thing again, they're kind of kind of has a bit of a MacBook Air-ish feel to it. So that's kind of interesting. But I was mostly impressed with the fact that this kind of came out of the woodwork. We just really didn't hear anything about it until today, or yesterday, rather. And it's a nice upgrade. I think what Brian gave some good points that it's probably not a huge deal if you already have the iPad 1, but I mean, it's a sleek step in the right direction if you haven't gotten an original iPad and you want to get the second iPad 2. So the whole slogan there is thinner, lighter, faster, FaceTime, smart covers, and 10 hours of battery life. So I guess that really does sum it up.
Yeah, and if you don't have the original iPad, this, you know, would be a good starting point for sure if you want to get one.
Did the iPad, the original, did those prices go down or are they just sold out? Can you not get those anymore?
No, they're down like for $350.
Okay.
On the Apple store.
And what, Brian? What was the pricing on this new on the new ones? Did it same price?
It's the same price for each model, starting at $499 for the 16 gig Wi-Fi.
And then if you want 3G on it, is that $699? Is that right?
I'm not sure.
You know, that is so off
my radar.
I'd have
to pull up the prices.
Yeah, Andrew, is that on your radar? Is an iPad on your radar?
Yeah. No, we're it's hard to say.
So I'm gonna say no.
I think it's a nice to have. Yeah, I like to go with the thing that it's okay to want something, but can you justify it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't justify an iPad for what it is.
Yeah.
Down here the prices down here when the announcement was finished dropped by $180. So the 16 gig with Wi-Fi went from $630 to $450.
Right.
And for the version one, yeah.
Right.
So the 64 gig Wi-Fi and 3G went from over $1,000 down to $840.
Okay.
So it sort of puts it a bit more in the affordable range, but
yeah.
You know, it's still a tablet.
Another cool thing. Sorry.
I was just going to say, it's still a tablet that I don't see that is going to replace the PC.
Sure. Sure. And we talked a little bit about that at the end of last week's show.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah, Brian, what were you going to say?
Another cool thing about iOS 4.3 is that it will include iMovie and GarageBand.
Okay.
And the GarageBand, you can actually play virtual instruments.
Yeah.
So
whole bands iPad playing. I can see Christian now playing the virtual violin on the iPad.
Yeah.
On the iPad. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I came across a video this week of a guy who rigged himself up. He was a runner, and he rigged himself up with four iPhones and an iPad. And so one phone was facing out to record where he was running. One was facing in to record his face as he was running. One was running Runkeeper. That's an application I use that to track his distance and his time and his pace and all those things. And one was open for communication to his team. You know, he had some guys that would follow him on, you know, on this marathon route, and he was running the Tokyo Marathon. And he had an iPad. An iPad strapped to himself that they would. And I don't exactly know what he was doing with the iPad, to be honest with you. I think it was there just because he could have it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, I don't want to say that was ridiculous, but it was one of those things you kind of go,
it's hardcore geek.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit over the top, but certainly with the iPad 2 coming out, things are changing. I think, Brian, you might have said it best. I think really if you don't have an iPad, certainly you're going to want to go with version 2. I think if you're waiting for the really good stuff, I think it's version 3 that's coming. At least that's what I'm hearing people say.
Yeah,
at this point. So, yeah. Christian, do you have what's your tablet again? You haven't. Oh, you, okay. He's working on something.
Asus.
He's got an Asus, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I have the Asus 1000HE tablet from last year with the Intel Atom 280 processor.
Would you upgrade that to an iPad if money really wasn't if it was not really that much of an option? Would you go to the iPad platform?
No, I'd probably leave it at the netbook, because for me, I need the keyboard when I'm doing schoolwork. So.
Okay. Yeah, and Andrew, to your point, I still don't think, as much as the on-screen keyboard is there on the iPad, I just don't think that replaces a natural keyboard.
Well, it doesn't really, but you get used to it after a while.
Yeah, I see a lot of people typing on them in meetings and the like. But I also wonder after a while if they're playing Angry Birds rather than paying attention to the meeting as well.
Yeah, you're probably right. And let's talk about this for a second, because I am so distracted by my phone when I'm in meetings. I mean, if the meeting is – this is how – when I'm in a corporate meeting now, this is how I know if it's a good meeting or a bad meeting. If everybody's –
must play Angry Birds.
If everybody's looking at their phone. The meeting, you might as well just adjourn, right? It's like, obviously what we're talking about is not important enough to engage in the actual meeting discussion. And I can't tell you guys how many meetings I go to now, and everybody's on their phone the whole meeting. And they're checking email I'm sure they're being productive in some way. Now, from a personal standpoint, that does change my productivity, because if I do get stuck in a boring meeting, And I know, I guess some of my coworkers are listening to this, but if I get stuck in a boring meeting, I'm going to pull out my phone and start checking. You know, I'm going to start being productive somewhere else. So I guess the tables turn. You know, if you're the meeting organizer and people are on the phone, you've probably got to. You know, it's probably not going anywhere, and you should probably just adjourn. If you're the one doing it, certainly it increases productivity, because you can check. If you get stuck in one of those meetings, you can check your stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say on a similar tangent, didn't they say that James Franco spent most of the Oscars the other night tweeting?
Probably.
When he was also presenting it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's taking it to a whole new level.
Yeah. 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 Brian, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, in regard to the iPad too, is that there's currently a new iTunes update.
Right.
That you can download in preparation for your shiny new device, if you get one.
Yeah, 10.2.36 is the new iTunes. I have no idea what it's breaking. You have you've got a link we'll put out in the show notes. You've already looks like you've already written something up over at Simple Help. And,
yep.
We'll throw that out there, and folks can go take a peek at that. If they're going to actually do that. I did hear it comes with a pretty cool case.
That's really neat too.
Kind of magnetic and attaches to it to cover it. So it's a $30 or $40 case. So I don't know.
$30 for the polyurethane one, and $50 for the leather case. And when you cover up the iPad, it puts it to sleep.
Okay.
Which is kind of neat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So there must be some kind of sensor in there that senses the connection between the magnets and the case, and then it says go to sleep at that point. And I guess it's pretty sensitive, and it works pretty well.
There's some cool videos on Apple.com that show it in action. So.
Well, when I make millions off podcasting, the iPad will be the first thing that I buy.
Would you ever get an
iPad? There's a real interesting
– Jim?
Go ahead. Hold on. Let me answer that in a sec. Andrew, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, on the iPad case, there's a real interesting disclaimer on the leather one that said that the color may not stay true.
So the black may fade, right?
The black may fade, or the pink might turn to black. I'm not sure. But
yeah.
I thought that was an interesting disclaimer for them to put in it.
Yeah.
Because you'd be kind of disappointed if you fork out $60 for a case that doesn't – stay color true.
And I think that would be the case maybe for anything made out of that material. Would I buy an iPad? I would not rush out to buy one at this point. I'm really trying to be a minimalist from my equipment. So I really want to have a phone, and now I've got this 11-inch laptop that I bought, this HP Pavilion DM1Z.
Oh, right.
We talked about last week.
How's it going with that?
I haven't had a lot of chance to use it. I've been so busy doing other stuff at work and at home and such. I really haven't. I love the form factor and I love the size, but it's easy to it's easy to pull out and fire up and get going. I just don't think I need, at least at this point, although I've been doing a lot of PC re-images with where I work, and I end up carrying my laptop around with it open, right? And so people always kind of cringe when they see me carrying that thing around because they're like, I know you don't have a solid-state drive in that.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm doing it. I mean, I'm not – I've been doing it for a couple of weeks, and I haven't run any problems. I'm really careful not to drop it or twist it or tilt it.
That one pretty light?
Yeah, I have a Dell. It's a Latitude 4300 and a 14-inch screen. It's got the faux titanium plastic cover on it. very, very nice. Very nice laptop. It's been very durable for me. It's got a Core i5 in it, and for what I use, it's just very zippy and works very well. I'll be honest with you. I've thought of replacing that drive with a solid-state drive and paying for it for myself. Just the company won't do it. But I thought about, as prices coming down, put my own solid-state drive in it. It would speed up both the OS and I could carry it around. Because it's such a pain to close that, go to a conference room, open it back up, and did it hibernate? Did it sleep? Did it, do what it was supposed to do? Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. I got to reboot. I just leave it open and carry it.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I've done.
Instant on functionality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's
a solid state.
My desk to a conference room and then maybe down the hall and meet in somebody else's office. And it's just easier to leave the thing on. So, anyways.
If it wasn't an iPad, Jim, would you get a tablet, period? Or...
I'm just not all that excited about the tablet space right now. The majority of the things that I do, I need my keyboard for right now. And if I don't need the keyboard, I can do it on my phone. So my preference, and this is just my opinion, phone and a laptop, and I am good to go. Maybe someday that'll change, but for now, phone and a laptop.
Cool.
So... Brian, you've been working a little bit on this idea of DVD ripping, and of course, for most people, and this is kind of an odd subject to talk about because either you do it or you don't. And so, you go out and you buy a new DVD, whether it's Blu-ray or it's just a regular DVD, and some guys just have the real urge to rip that to their computer, store it somewhere in there, and watch it off the computer. And I've never really understood that. I mean, I get it. I get that part. But I don't I'm not. I'm like, I bought the DVD. I'm just going to watch it. And I'm really not even buying DVDs anymore. I'm streaming them through Netflix at this point. We have a Netflix account, so we get the one CD or one DVD a month. And then if it's not in the streaming, it's not available streaming, we get the DVD through the mail and watch it, and that works out really well, really, really well. But some folks like to rip those DVDs to their computer. Now, this is, Brian, kind of the question I've always had on this. It doesn't seem like that's always very easy. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a software that makes it easy. It doesn't seem like there's a process that makes it easy. What file format do I need to keep it in? I mean, that just doesn't seem like an easy process to me.
Right, yeah. Andrew and I were talking about it earlier this week, and Blu-ray especially is difficult to back up. Sony has a proprietary software encoding process that they use, but there are programs out there that will let you do it. Most of them are commercial, so you're gonna have to pay a few dollars.
Yeah,
but
it just seems like a big hassle.
It shouldn't be either. I mean, I bought the CD or I bought the DVD. I own it. Why can't I just back it up?
Yeah. Well, and that's there's some rights management on that, right? They don't want you to back it up.
They're worried about you putting it on torrent or whatever.
Sure.
But
sure, and people do.
And they're worrying about you restoring it as well.
Yeah.
It's like I own it. Why can't I do what I want with it? You know?
Yeah, that's kind of a whole separate issue. Christian, do you guys rip DVDs at your place and store them on the server, or do you guys just watch a DVD like some normal people?
If it does come off like Netflix or something, the home server picks it up and throws it in for Media Center. But yeah, nothing extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brian, you've got some, out at Simple Help, you've got some how-tos kind of on how to rip and convert those to make that a little bit easier. So, again, we'll drop those in the show notes if folks want to go out and take a peek. I'm not a big proponent of it, but I get your point, Brian, that you bought it, you own it, you should be able to back it up.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it might get all scratched up, you might lose it, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so you want a nice backup so you can have the content that you paid for. You can rip CDs.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Dave McCabe's a bit of an advocate of ripping his kids' DVDs and Blu-rays onto the home server because that way he doesn't have the risk of them getting scratched up as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I know you can get them in various formats too. I used Handbrake for a while. That would convert those things into various mobile formats that would allow me to put it on my touch or, the smaller devices like that. I did about two of those, and I went, "This sucks." You know,
why is that?
Because it's a manual process that I never really, I didn't really know what I was doing with it, and I had so many options. You know, we have a saying, options equal confusion. And Handbrake just has so many different formats. I'm like, which one do I need and how should I, what should I put it down to? Here's what I'm a proponent of. So if I'm going to buy it, it should have the DVD format on it, and then it should have a digital copy that I can download easily. Right. And then it should have a mobile format. All that should be done for me. And it should all be standardized. And I should, if I want to watch it on mobile, I should be able to download that and move it to my mobile device and be able to watch it there. And this rights management stuff should kind of just go away.
Well, they have been doing that on some, like, you can go to a store and, like, you buy a movie and it comes with the Blu-ray disc, the DVD disc, and the digital copy off iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah, that just needs to be clean for the consumer that way.
Right.
And folks shouldn't have to go through, gyrations of standing on their head while bending their leg backwards, while typing upside down. And, always seemed to be a big pain for me. And you guys, I mean, again, for the average guy, I just don't think they can figure that out for the most part. I'm not going to want to figure it out. If they did want to figure it out, Brian, you got some how-tos on how to do that.
Yeah, I got a few. So
we'll point
and
them.
The, speaking of Handbrake, the new version does support Blu-ray. So
all right,
oh, nice.
And that's what's that website, Brian? Where'd you go to? Where would I go to get Handbrake? Is it just Handbrake.com?
I don't know off the top of my head. Assume so.
Yeah, look that up real quick. But Handbrake is by far, at least I think, maybe one of the.
Okay, it's Handbrake.fr.
Okay.
Is that France?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I see from the notes here that Gmail, was Gmail down this week?
Yeah, about 33% was knocked out.
So when you say 33% of the users could not access their email, for how long?
I think it was...
Sorry, that was... there's the server signing off.
I think it was a couple of days there that Google was down.
Okay. A couple days? Really?
Yeah, they were backing up or restoring from tape, even.
Yeah, Google lost about 0.08% of their mail across the board.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good
bit of a shock to the system. But it's not the first time, And you know what? Hotmail have had the same problems, and Yahoo have had that problem as well. I think it's just that Google's seen as being such a stalwart in the backbone of the internet these days that, when it happens to Google, it's like, oh my God, Google's just crashed.
Yeah, anything goes wrong with the almighty, chaos ensues.
Yeah, Christian, let me ask you this question. Is that inexcusable in your mind? I mean, do you give Google a pass?
That's actually a difficult question because, in some regards, I don't think it was, from a public relations standpoint, it wasn't really dealt with that well. It was just like kind of like no one knew who was getting on and who wasn't getting on and what was going on until it was too late. But, I mean, it's weird, wild stuff when you have Google with being the large company that it is not being able to have those servers replicated and back up and work properly. But, I mean, it's so large and complex that it's surely easy enough for their backup systems to just not work right. So I don't know if I give them a free pass, but it's not like I'm chastising them for it.
Okay. All right. That's you know. You know, people – okay, so for the podcast here, we have – you know, I have email accounts through Google that I set up for you guys, your name at theaverageguy.tv. I really expect that to be there. And I expect the email that I send to those accounts, at least for me, I expect every email I send to you guys to be able to make it. There are corporations that are paying now. You know, my account happens to be free because we're under 50 users. But I know there's school districts. I know there's city, city governments that have switched over to Google completely for their email. Is that not unexcusable to think that your email can just be lost?
Well, I mean, you're paying for it, but look at what you're paying for.
Well, and let me clarify here, Christian. Do you know, was it just free accounts that were affected, or were paid accounts affected as well?
I'm honestly not sure, okay. But I mean, yeah. my high school uses Gmail, and every student and faculty has a Gmail based email, and it wasn't down at all. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when you have millions of, you know, would you say 33% of the network was down at one point?
Sure.
But with everybody, I mean, that's a lot of people, but also a lot of people use it. So being in the 66% could have been very easy. I certainly didn't notice, but that is a little bit of an alarming, you know, that's maybe a whole nother topic in its own is, do you trust the cloud for your email?
That was kind of my point, you know. Look at what you're buying. You're buying something on the cloud with, you know, ways for it to actually go down, and you have to expect that, you know.
But I shouldn't expect that, though. I'll be honest. I shouldn't. If I'm going to use email, Andrew, what do you want to say?
I was just going to say, I think that if you're picking up a service that you're not paying for, you know, you're sort of getting the warranty that you're not paying for as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we've had a few of our big corporate clients who've migrated to Google Mail for applications, so Gmail. And when you go to the enterprise level one, you get your little application that runs in your taskbar, and it makes it look like Exchange Server, and you know, you can do your calendaring and whatnot. And I think if you were paying, you know, $50 a year for a mailbox, and you know, you lost your enterprise mail for a couple of days, you'd be pretty pissed.
Yeah,
I know, I would be. But I think if you know, I mean, I run three different domains on Google for applications. My car club runs on it. And you know, if we lost mail for a day, you know, what are we really missing? You know. You know, I think if we were hosted on Hotmail and Hotmail went down for a day, then you'd be in the same boat.
Yeah,
but I do think it's a risk though with everything moving to the cloud too. We've got a customer at the moment who's in the process of migrating to an offshore data center and running all their mail over the internet. And what happens the first time the internet connection goes down? You know, you wonder about the dependencies that we're putting on everything.
Yeah. Man, no, you know, for sure.
In the long, you know, the long term of things, I mean, Google's been very reliable, you know, and when there's a small hiccup, a lot of people freak out.
So. Yeah, I wouldn't call this small, though. I'll be honest with you. If it's that big, if it's you know, truly that big of a of an outage, I would not call that small. I would call that very significant. Yeah, well, is there any way, guys, is there any way for me to back up my, so I say I've got Gmail or Hotmail, Yahoo, whatever, what's the way? Can I back up that email in some way so that if I need to keep it, it doesn't just disappear?
Download your email from Outlook as an archive in a PST file and save it on your network drive.
Okay.
Or use Windows Live Mail. Auto set up the IMAP from Google to sync. Leave the mail on Gmail's server. Also download a copy to your server and then set that server to back it up.
But that means I have to have a mail server.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just means you need Windows Live to download your email and then set up your computer to back up the PST file to your network.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, or you can just set up a live account, you know, a Hotmail account, and have it retrieve your emails from Google and stick them in a separate folder. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it, including services like Backupify, which gives you 2 gigabytes of online storage for free, you know, depending on how much you use Google Mail. Yeah. You know, that may not be enough, but they also have pay for services as well. So.
Right. I could have 2 free accounts that I just forward one to the other. Right, mm-hmm. I could do that too. That's what you're saying. But so Google automatically forwards to a Yahoo account, and then I always have the email in 2 places. The chances of either one of those going out at the same time, would be pretty small. And both are basically unlimited at this point.
And then if you have an email client, you can download it, like Christian was saying, to your hard drive.
Yeah,
you know, and Thunderbird's free. So
okay. Yeah, although for me at least, I'm not sure I want to store email on my hard drive. I mean,
it's so 1980s, isn't it?
It kind of is. You know, as we go through this reimage project, I'm really encouraging folks. You know, this is a good opportunity for folks to not save anything on their C drive, right? Their system drive. A lot of folks put it on the desktop, or they've saved it some folders on the C drive. And I really say, you know, it's time to really get everything on the network where it's backed up, because we don't do, you know, it would be a massive undertaking to back up every single workstation or laptop that we have every night. And most corporations don't do that, but this gives us an opportunity to say, hey, put that stuff on the network or in our corporate cloud, right? Put that on the cloud and don't use the C drive, because if that fails, we can never get that thing back. Same kind of thing here with that. I'd like to keep it in the cloud, but I like the idea of Backupify keeps it in the cloud, 2 email accounts that kind of sync to each other, or, you know, one sends it to the other. And then if I did lose email, I could always go back. It is kind of email's kind of a mess right now, though. I'll be honest with you. There's just a lot of crap out there, and I get a boatload of spam, and I find myself in Twitter. And I'll be honest with you guys, I find myself using Facebook messaging more and more all the time as more people move on to Facebook. If I want to contact somebody, I'm sending them a note in Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I just feel weird about Facebook, I guess. I don't know.
Christian, what's the majority of your messaging at this point? If you were to kind of summarize it in percentages, what do you think, what style of messaging are you using the most at this point?
Probably about half Skype audio text and half email, and then some SMS in there.
Skype is that high, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just talked to my sister on Skype the other night. You can just have a great 5-minute conversation and use video, and it's just like it's just fantastic. So that's interesting. Okay, well, there's some things out there. We'll post some notes about this Backupify. I know Brian's got some stuff again. We're pimping a lot of your stuff tonight, Brian.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about Backupify, it backs up other online services like Twitter, Facebook, Flickr. I don't know all of them off the top of my head.
I think
but
we mentioned that a couple shows back, and so folks can check that out. I think that's just Backupify, which is just a great name, backupify.com. So, great. Well, hey, let's move on to Christian's Corner, because I'm really interested in what Christian's got. Christian, you had a great topic last week. I think all of us were like, these audio macros were just was just awesome. Did you guys, either to Andrew or Brian, did either of you guys go out and try that out at all during the week?
I didn't have a chance to, no.
All right. Very intriguing.
I was pushed as well.
Yeah, I hear you. Very intriguing. A great idea. Christian, what do you have for us this week?
This weekend is more of like a news-oriented session here, but I'm doing some more theorizing on my end. First thing, going back to the iPad 2, is that Netflix released an iPad update with a whole new custom user interface and some beans, but apparently it loses DVD queuing as a feature. So it's kind of one of those pro-con updates where you're getting all these great fixes, and then it's like, no, you can't get DVD queuing. So
we're going to fix a few things, but in the process, we're going to take away a little bit of functionality.
Right.
Okay.
So there's that. Cool thing for the week was Engadget did a write-up on someone who posted a YouTube video of a guy from the UK who did every single Windows installation as an upgrade in order from DOS 5.0 to Windows 7. So consecutively updated the OS each time and showed how the programs from DOS 2.0 and the games from DOS 3.1 still ran after doing all the upgrades and
really?
Stuff.
So okay.
Wow. That's
so
really
upgrades and it didn't wipe out those earlier program.
No, he still had QBasic on there by the time he made it to Windows 7.
Huh.
So it's quite fascinating. The link will be in the show notes. It's the one that's showing up right now. So that's a good watch. Now, my interesting tidbit for the week is Trillion came out with a new version of their chat client. Now, Trillion, if you don't know what it is a really common and becoming widely used chat client that ties in everything. Anything you can think of that relates to the word chat, Trillion supports it. So you can have your Skype, your MSN, your MySpace, your Facebook, your AIM, your ICQ, your IRQ. Everything goes on Trillion. And they're the first company and chat client to introduce an idea that the editor of Engadget had talked about a while back called the idea called continuous chat querying, whereas like if you've been Skyping on your netbook the night before and you go the next day to turn on your PC and open up Skype, it's like there's like this catch-up time where like you don't know where you are in your messages until that other computer hops back online and the stream or the chat stream catches up. And they're the first chat company to make it so that there's no lag or problem in not being able to find that stream. It's just continuously following any device that's paired with the Trillion. So that you're not losing messages or waiting for other computers to come on and update the messages. It just always knows where your stream is and where your last message was. So I think that's something that people may be attracted to and may be an adoption point for the average user, because definitely it's something that's easily usable. One being the easiest, five giving the hardest. This definitely gets it down to the one. You just configure your chat clients. I think there is a premium version you can pay a couple bucks for, it's worth it. It's pulling together and using technologies even the pros in the own individual categories haven't tapped upon yet.
So I have the premium service that allows us all to see each other when we're podcasting. So it's multi-point chat, video chat. Does it support that functionality from Skype?
I'm not sure about that. Okay. It's a pretty new release, so I haven't really checked up on the latest. And it's been quite a while since I've been a beta tester for them, so I will have to reinvest my time researching into it.
Well, if you've used Skype for any length of time and you've gone between PCs, you know the pain of when you fire up a PC that has maybe been turned off for a couple days, and especially if you're using a lot of Skype. That catch-up is just brutal.
It's very annoying.
You get that Skype sound, and it doesn't all come in even at once.
Yeah, it's a long delay.
Yeah. That is one of the many drawbacks of Skype. I mean, I love Skype, and we use it all the time, but that is kind of a menace for folks. Can I, Christian, chat if I am on Skype? So I set up all my users, right? It mm-hmm. doesn't matter then at that point. It's a combined or a unified inbox.
Right.
And so I'd have to have an AOL account to talk somebody on AOL.
Yes. You still need the accounts, but now everything's just plugged into one joint. So.
Okay. And Brian, does this work like Pigeon that you use? Same idea?
Yeah, in a sense. But it doesn't have Skype by default. And okay. I tried out a plugin for Pigeon to add Skype. It's a little flaky, though. So,
all right.
I'm interested, actually, to try this out. Does this Trillian Astra?
Yes. Christian? Trillian Astra was the new
I haven't used it for a while, so.
I mean, the 3.1 was what I had always used, and then they went through this really long phase of getting Astra to work, and they launched this whole web version and started putting it on all the phones. So now Trillian Astra 4 was like this whole huge step for them, and then this Trillian 5 beta for Windows is what has this continuous client stuff. So if you pay for that Astra account, I think it's a one-time thing. You can buy it for like $15, the pro version. But even the free version, I mean, everything is just spectacular. They do things right the first time.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's available now, or is that still in beta?
Yeah, you can download the beta from their website, trillian.im, or chat for free in their browser. So, again, any platform, it's connects everything, and it's really nice graphical user interface. I mean, it's like eye candy deluxe.
I have to try it out. So for the tech guy, right, who might be chatting with folks in various networks, this could be a real time saver from having to log into each one of those. I'm kind of exclusively on Skype at this point. I mean, I'm really not chatting anywhere else. Maybe a little Google Talk. So this would allow me to bring Google Talk in, right, have Google Talk and Skype.
Yeah, it's multi-client like Pigeon.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. We'll have to kind of watch that. I think that could be a good solution. It'd be interesting to know how it supports video, especially when we talk about this, you know, this premium service of multi-point video chat. This multi-point thing on Skype, we pay $70 for the first year, I think, and it's fantastic to do group chat. I mean, it just changes the dynamic on the podcast here, and so I'll probably end up paying for it each year, kind of after that. So, very cool. All right, Christian, anything else?
No, I think that about wraps it up for okay. Christian's Corner.
Very cool. Well, Andrew took a phone call, so he's off doing that real quick. Brian, you had a topic in here, and he just gave me the it's an iffy signal, so we may not get Andrew back for the rest of the podcast. Brian, you had a note in here about remoting from a Mac to a Windows PC.
Right. So, as you all know, I have a Mac, and I'm starting to use it in a Windows environment. And Microsoft has a remote desktop client for the Mac. So this is going from your Mac to any Windows PC that's capable of incoming RDP sessions. So home users, you're out of luck. But it works really good. And you just have to enable remote desktop through system properties on your Windows machines, and then download the client, and we'll have that in the show notes. It's Microsoft Remote Desktop Connection Client for Mac 2.0.1, and you just install that on your Mac, launch the icon, put in the computer name or IP address, and your password, of course, and then you'll have a remote session. It looks really good, and it works well, and very little lag time. And I was actually even able to get into my Windows Home server.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so that's very cool.
Yeah, and I think you know, I think we're going to see a lot more multi, you know, where households have a Mac and a PC. You know, it used to be you either a Mac or a PC, right? And with the infiltration of some of these Mac devices that have gotten more popular, I think we're just going to see more and more integration where folks are going to maybe own one of each. I mean, I know I've got one of each. I use one for testing, but I do see a point where that starts to blend. So I think we may see more cross-platform integration, stuff like that, where you can share fairly easily. And, my opinion,
really, it's getting to that point where those OSs are blurring a little bit, and especially when you're using web services, it doesn't really matter. I mean, my Dropbox is my Dropbox, whether I'm getting to it from my Mac or I'm getting to it from my PC or my Android phone. The service just works, and I don't even have to worry about what platform I'm on. You know, I guess with things like iLife and GarageBand or Adobe Photoshop or some of those things, there might be still some opinionated people who say, nope, got to have it on a Mac, or no, certainly gaming, I got to have that on a PC or whatever. But I don't know. I see that blurring. Christian, do you see that as well, or do you still see a huge digital divide there?
No, I see a bit of it.
Kind of coming together, and it's an interesting. It used to be so Mac and PC, and I know that battle was fierce, and it just seems like that's calming down a little bit, and people aren't so crazy about that anymore. So maybe not. I could be missing.
Well,
that,
you're always going to have your purists that, you know, are diehards about what they use and what clients work on, which operating system. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm in your boat with that one.
Well, the OS becomes like a commodity at some point, and
it's like you don't even need the OS almost.
Well, you need to get to the web.
Like,
right?
Well, yeah, right. But it's almost like everything is third-party programs or cloud-based programs, and you don't even really know which OS you're using. I mean,
yeah, yes and no. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I'm still, when I get on my Mac, I still have to really think about where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but it is getting easier, and it is getting better, I guess it's getting to that point, at least for me, where for the most part I just go to the web for a lot of stuff, and I know, you know, we're enabling a lot of that stuff where we work. It's just web-based stuff, which makes changing the OS a lot easier. And I guess the idea behind the Chromium OS, which, by the way, have you guys seen anything come? I mean, it seemed like they were going to give away all these laptops. Yeah, go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, I haven't really heard much from the Chrome OS world lately.
Yeah, it just kind of died. I mean, it's just
Well, I don't think it died. They're just probably working on it. Right. It needs work, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're still behind the project, totally, but
yeah, just
Andrew's off his call.
Yeah, Andrew's back. Andrew, welcome back.
Yeah, sorry, boss call.
Oh, do you need to run?
No, it's all good.
Okay, good. Hey, let's get to your article real quick, and then we'll wrap things up here. So, what you're showing us is a pretty ingenious little idea. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, as I've mentioned in the last couple of weeks, I'm looking at some lower powered system options. So, looking, you know, for an Asus, waiting for Asus to release the Fusion processor.
In Australia, right?
Yeah, down in the colonial outpost, yeah. And one of the things Asus have just released in the last couple of weeks is the shipping case. You can unfold it and refold it, and it's got a whole bunch of punch out holes in it, and you can turn the case that the motherboard ships in into a temporary PC case, which they're saying is good for a year. as an actual PC case. Yeah. And I reckon that from an environmental perspective and just purely for convenience, if you want to pull a motherboard out of a box and say, righto, let's get this thing up and going, I reckon that is a really cool idea.
Yeah. No, I like that a bunch. In fact, that I think it'd make a great home server post.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And it looks like a PC case.
Right.
Just made out of cardboard.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we've on the home server show, we've tried a bunch of different configurations for cases. You know, there's your standard case that you'd put your PC in. Some folks have gone super micro, tried to jam those things into the smallest space they can get them in. Some folks have used the Norco, you know, gigantic cases. And then others have gone to these alternative cases. One even built their motherboard and put that up on the wall.
Wasn't that on Home Server Show?
Yeah, they call it the Mona Server, you know, instead of the Mona Lisa, the Mona Server. So, some interesting different configurations for motherboard.
Yeah, I thought the one that was done on the home server show that was up on the website made of Perspex was pretty cool too. I'm not sure that it'd fit in my house having a PC full made of Perspex and you know the flashing lights and everything, but that was a pretty funky idea.
Yeah, yeah.
True dedication.
I took one and put it out in the garage and it's in the garage. I was putting it on, just going to put it on a board and
a paint board on the wall.
Just slap it right on the wall. Yeah.
You know, I'd be worried about maybe it getting too hot and starting cardboard on fire. if you're really running it pretty intensely.
Yeah, I think you'd want to overclock it.
No,
but with some of these chips that are out now that are running, you know, pretty cool and pretty low power, I'd imagine you'd be all right from that standpoint. Where do you put the power supply for this thing?
That was the $64,000 question. Okay. I think you need one of those external power bricks.
Yeah.
If you're going to go with something that's low power, then you'd probably be running one anyway, I imagine.
Right. Right. So, well, very cool. We'll put a link to that. That's out at itworld.com, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. I should say Brian will put a link to that in the show notes. And he's always kind enough to get these show notes ready for me to go. I do want to wrap it up. Anybody got anything else they want to sneak in real quick?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, guys, I appreciate you surviving through a late night with me and next week, just for those folks listening to the recording, and if you want to listen to us live, next week will probably be 8:30 or 9 again Central, 8:30 or 9 p.m. Central. I've just got some events going on the next couple Thursdays, and it's not super easy for me to change the day. So if you want to listen live, come out and do that. This will be more West Coast friendly than it's ever been. It's really late for us and really late for Christian out there on the East Coast. I think we're getting close to 11 for him. Of course, Andrew, for you, I mean, it's middle of the afternoon? Yeah, this is great for you. So anyways, we will. Yeah, he's showing me a picture outside his window, and it's beautiful out there. So
daylight shot.
All right, guys. Appreciate you coming in again, and that'll be it for the Home Tech Show. We'll do it again next week, and we thanks folks for listening. Have a good night.
See you later.
Night, guys.
Take care, everyone.
Everybody all right? Everybody ready to go? Sorry for my long delay. Andrew, hope that didn't put you in a bad spot with your employer. You're still at lunch.
I'm working from home. Nice. I had lunch about 15 minutes ago. So.
Good. You're on your lunch break. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apathy is rife.
I'm a, yeah. I always say you can't intimidate apathy. That's kind of my that's kind of my motto.
I'm going to plagiarize that.
Yeah, you can. I always say it. I'm like, look, you can't intimidate apathy. So get off my back. All right.
I'm gonna put that in my email signature.
There you go. I hope that's original. I think that is. I think I came up with that. As long as you give me credit, I don't care.
Yeah, sure. You can't intimidate apathy.com.
You can. Ooh, shit. I better get that down.
Yeah.
It thinks nobody's live in chat. So every once in a while, somebody peek at chat. Make sure there's nobody out there alone.